This is the Linksys for Me Too podcast series with Gregor Ross and Andy Wallace. So, welcome to the Linksys from Me Too podcast. I'm very excited to have Vicky Hope and Ed Vickers from Loop Agencies here with us today. With our From Me Too podcast, we are looking into the experience of successful people, what's driven them, and how they've ended up where they are. So I suppose it's from me to SME in your case, and onwards and upwards. And we're really looking forward to getting to know more about yourselves and Loop Agencies.
So we're going to start by going back the way. So are you okay both sharing a bit about your upbringing, your background,
yeah,
and what took you to where you are now?
You can go first.
To start, so yeah, going right back. So I was born and bred in Bristol. You might be able to tell by the accent that I try and cover up. Just like a normal working class family, lovely family, one sister. I think my life started changing a little bit. My parents got divorced when I was quite young, so suddenly my destiny was boarding school. That wasn't my destiny, but it was for practical reasons there. Which was cool because it put me in a whole different world, right? You know, I was mixing with different kids that I wouldn't have been in Bristol, maybe opened my horizons. I can say that now looking back. At the time, I think I just really didn't want to go. You know, it's just one of those things. And I actually, confession, worked out you could fake all the entrance exams because it was an entrance exam, right? So if you put rubbish answers, you didn't get in.
Well, that's a good confession.
Yeah, it's a great
confessions have started
exactly
already.
Yeah. But I mean, I managed to get away with that for about four or five schools. But then the fifth one, they did a personal interview and they quite liked me. So they thought we were going to give me a chance. Damn you, headmaster. So yeah, that was that.
Good. Yeah, country bumpkin me, brought up on a farm in Cheshire. And really, I think kind of grew. I probably didn't really start growing up until I left and went to university and was exposed to, you know, a city and, you know, more people and life in general. And I think that kind of woke something in me, kind of started the fire in my belly that's kind of, I guess, got me to where I am today.
Yeah. And do you think what you've just went through there, did that inform any of your decisions at the start of your career, your business career?
Do you know, when you look backwards, I'm probably brutally independent, and it's probably because of that, right? But it's done me well as yeah. well, you know, so it has been a good sort of secret power. And just a lot of change, moved around a lot. So from boarding school to not really having a hometown, so to moving for university and relocating to Edinburgh, you know, I've lived quite a lot of places, London a lot around the UK. So, yeah, I'm quite happy with that sort of change and movement. So
For me, it's probably a little bit different. I wasn't academic, didn't mm-hmm. enjoy school, did the bare minimum. There was always my mom always used to laugh at me. She says, there's always something more interesting you'd want to be doing than anything to do with school. So I think the freedom that university gave me, you know, you're doing something you enjoy then. So I did enough to get by. I think that was probably the best summation of it. And then when I got to university, I actually did architectural technology at Napier University, and it was finally something that I really enjoyed doing. And I think that work, I worked on the farm growing up, so I had a work ethic, mm-hmm. though that wasn't in question. But I just hadn't applied it to the right things. I certainly hadn't applied it to school. So when I was at university and enjoying what I was doing, I kind of found that it wasn't difficult to work hard if you enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So I think that really, that's something that stuck with me throughout my entire career.
Yeah, so I'm hearing fiercely independent.
Yeah.
And then actually having a drive, you know, and really enjoying something to yeah. make it work. So you can see the foundation starting to begin.
Yeah, and I guess I was that sorty one. I just worked hard. You know, didn't really have a passion for anything, but I always just put the effort in diligently.
Yeah.
Studious.
We'll come back to sort of the career and how that moved. But, you know, you've arrived in Edinburgh. So what, you know, two English guys coming to Edinburgh. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, Greg? Like half of Edinburgh. But, you know, do you like it here?
It's like the best city on earth, right, isn't it?
Yeah.
So my husband got a job up here, so we moved up sort of mm-hmm. 20 years ago. I think it was less than that, 19 years ago, newborn baby and a toddler in the back of a car driving up from Essex. Literally on a flip of a coin, to be honest. He got a job and it's like, oh, Edinburgh sounds cool, right? Let's go. And literally have never looked back. I mean, the best city for culture, work, life, beauty, may never leave.
Yeah. It's funny, so many people we speak to and the very business orientated, very clear about the direction a lot of the careers had, but at some point they'll have that flip the coin or going left instead of right.
That fork in the road. Yeah. Same for me, actually. Came for university. Mum and Dad actually lived up in Perth before we were born, so we knew Scotland. We used to come up a lot as kids, and I had the opportunity of Coventry or Edinburgh, and it wasn't there wasn't really a debate. You know, it was always going to be Edinburgh, and I think even now, I've been here since 1997, and I'll get that bus in, and you'll go over the bridges, and you look out over the castle, and it just still to this day is, why would you want to live anywhere else? It's just a beautiful, beautiful city. And when I finished my degree, I couldn't get a job, and then that fork in the road moment of, I can go back home now, and there's a job on the farm, and I can, you know, follow my dad and do that route, and or I can stay here. And I did everything I could to stay in Edinburgh because I just thought the opportunity is right in front of me. And if I leave here, I don't know if I'll come back. So
yeah, I think it's quite inspirational. I mean, I went to see Vicky to chat about the podcast the other day there on the top of your office roof deck. I mean, I can see we must put a panorama in of that for those that are watching because it's absolutely stunning. Yeah. You know, I'd probably go and sit there and get no work done. You know, apart from that, it's inspirational. So focusing maybe a bit on Vicky and then we'll come to Ed. In terms of your career, Vicky, you were senior roles at Standard Life. You were a partner at the AND Partnership, leading into NatWest Group. So, you know, what have you taken from those roles that's really, you know, put you in good stead for what you're doing now in the agency?
Yeah, I mean, you reel off those blue chip client brand names, right, don't you? And at the time, you know, you feel so lucky to be exposed to those opportunities, so especially in marketing, you know, the customer base, the marketing budgets, you know, back in the day in London as well, I used to run the Shell account across Europe, you know, and it's just these opportunities you look back on now and think, my goodness, you know, how lucky am I to have got exposed to those sorts of brands and all you learned from there. I met such great people as well, you know, which I probably will come on to. It's been a thread and a support of now setting up your own business. All those people from the past are still with you now, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's a through line, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And you really don't realise it at the time of these, you know, working that bit harder, the loyalty, whatever you've done, you know, hopefully being a decent person most of the time, you know, that kind of comes back. They're there to support you 20 years on when you're setting up your business. That's amazing to see.
Yeah, and good connections, and networking. I mean, I was just thinking when you were talking about your time at boarding school, from then on, you're almost like putting yourself out. You're saying like maybe a tough exterior, but you're effectively networking from a young age, aren't you? And having to survive, effectively.
Survival, I think, isn't it? It's like, but I suppose you are networking in a different guise as an 8-year-old.
But you don't, sometimes when they talk about creativity as well with younger people and you're in that creative business, you know, it's almost having the shackles off and, you know, fend for yourself. So I'm sure that's been relevant. Yeah.
And Ed, you were heading design and media Standard Life, another various senior agency role. So are you okay to go through those steps to where you got to now?
Yeah, no, I started at Royal Bank, was at Royal Bank for nearly 5 years. Purely, again, like you said, the way the cards fall, sometimes I started on a temp job just to stay in Edinburgh. But made an impression, obviously, because they gave me a full-time role. And then, as Vicky talks about, the people in your career that give you opportunities. I had a brilliant boss, very old school now, but probably not the way you would do stuff these days. But he said, I like you. What job would you like? And I pointed to the guy that was working on the Apple Mac, and I said, I've always been interested in design. And he just went, Alan, train him up. It snowballed from there. And then after Royal Bank, got the opportunity to go and work at Standard Life Investments when it split from Standard Life. So it was a new business, separated out as a separate business. And really, you know, it's funny, we look back now, putting in-house teams into client offices, mm-hmm. and we had an in-house creative team
mm-hmm.
25 years ago, and it was really, really good, and I could see the value of it then at the time, and I think it was maybe perceived as the kind of second-class citizen to using an agency, but the amount of stuff that we did mm-hmm. that was quite pioneering and groundbreaking at the time was fantastic. We built the first ever website for Standard Life Investments. We were doing very cool stuff with advertising online and digital, just as digital was getting started as well. So brilliant times. And then from there, I did probably the opposite of what people do. Agency people tend to drop into large corporates later in their careers. I kind of went the other way, which was quite rare because, again, that perception that, oh, you're not quite good enough to be in an agency because you work for a client. I went the other way because of my business acumen, because I'd worked in a big corporate. I had structure and rigor and process and things that TV at the agency I went to were looking for in a person because they were growing mm-hmm. rapidly at the time. So I went agency side second half of my career, and it's been brilliant to have both.
We've probably been similar, yeah. It's like 50-50, I think, I've done. I was like more classic London ad agency, into full service, into client side. So, but that really is, and you're very similar, aren't you, Ed? So it really helps us because we don't think of our clients as different, right? We were a client,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it, you are just the same. So we really have
walked
in their shoes.
That's invaluable, having been on both sides, isn't it?
Yeah,
it really is. And it's quite rare.
I think it is.
It's quite rare.
Yeah. Really and it. So where was the sliding doors moment when you guys met then?
So we both
not
went
my
to
meaning it's a romance or anything.
Yeah, a beautiful work marriage.
Yeah.
So we both worked at Standard Life. We didn't know each other, right? You were in the
That's
posh
right.
building. I was doing the real work in Life and Pensions. But we then worked together in the in-house agency for NatWest Group.
Yeah.
So that is. Well, we almost didn't because you were...
Vicky nearly didn't hire me because I was too digital.
Far too digital and boring. We don't need another one of those. Like, do we really need...
Interesting.
Yeah, but luckily, in a good coffee connection, I saw the error of my ways, we worked together for 3 years there, yeah.
And then, so what, I suppose coming to Loop, what brought you together? What were the circumstances that led to the creation of Loop?
Well, we never were going to start an agency. So that's the first thing. We never left to start an agency. Probably the last thing on my mind. It is an interesting story to sort of build on that.
Yes.
But we both just left, you know, post-COVID. You kind of reevaluate different chapter of your career after being there quite a long time. And it was a real sort of Starbucks coffee of...
We met for a
do?
Chat.
Yeah.
What are you going to do next? How
knows.
Are you? How are things? I was about to go on holiday to Spain with the family, and we literally over the course of maybe an hour and a half went from how are things to so are we going to do this? And then I went on holiday, and we actually got the company's house registration certificate.
Yeah.
You sent me a photo of it while we were...
Well, this is where my lovely impatient gene kicks in. So I think you were at the cinema. We had the name registered. You came out of the cinema. There's the name.
Yeah.
Then on
it was.
Your return from holiday, company's house, set up, sorted.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So what were the emotions? Because we've just done it ourselves.
Yeah,
and
no,
I know it's sort of fresh in my mind. But what, you know, if you could, you know, give us two or three words that would sum up what you felt when the photograph was sent through, Ed.
For me, excitement, because earlier on, when I'd moved from client side to agency side, in my head, I'd kind of always thought, wouldn't it be brilliant to have something that was my own, that I owned, that I wasn't working for somebody else. And I thought that ship had sailed. I thought I was too old, too long in the tooth. I had a family, I had a mortgage. It was that the need to have a check coming in at the end of the month was... Mm. Probably a higher priority than doing something on a whim until this opportunity came up. So I think excitement, daunting, because it's like, well, I've never done this and I don't really know, I'm a good designer and I know my trade, but I don't know how to run a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest takeaway was that I wasn't, like it was a, there was two of us. We always had the two of us. So it was kind of, you bounced off each other And we've seen that throughout the whole time, haven't we? There's times when I'm struggling. We have a good enough relationship that I can just say, I'm struggling, Vicky. And you will stand and go, okay, let's break it down, and vice versa. So we bounce off each other. I could not have done this on my own. I could not have started a business on my own. And being able to sustain the pace that we've gone at, you wouldn't have been able to do it.
It's a great insight into starting your own business, having that co-founder with you as well. And that's certainly where I get a huge amount of power from, working with Andy. And I think you did an interview that I remember reading online where you were doing your diary for the week.
You
spoke about one of the nights where you're doing the pitch, Ed went away on holiday, and you were saying you're struggling because you didn't have that bounce off for the chat at that time.
Yeah, it is so true. I mean, you know, people can say, oh, you could have done it on your own, right? And we could all think, we're all pretty self-sufficient people. You know, we can do it on our own. But God, you underestimate that sort of emotional, but also technical support, everything. You know, it's really has been our accelerator without doubt. But back to your sort of original question of how I felt, you know, it's really interesting because I don't think I ever had an ambition to start a business, which is very ironic to say sort of out loud now. I did a sort of lifestyle gig of being a, you know, freelance marketing consultant. I was very comfortable not being employed. But so I had that real, I wasn't daunted by the business side of things because I guess that's where I naturally lean. So the energy there was this real, and we still have it now, but it was on fire, this sort of burning bridge mentality. Of literally deep end, there is literally not an hour, you know, that then we're not going to work to make this succeed. And we'll probably come on to sort of setting yourself
that was the
deadlines.
Pep talk. That was the pep talk you gave me.
Was it?
Yeah, don't expect to have your weekends for a while.
Yes. Oh, I think
Yeah, but, you know, Gregor gets a few messages on a Saturday and Sunday, don't you?
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, if we think about this first chapter we've been speaking about, two main things, the hard work, came through very clearly, and then timing. That can be timing in terms of mentorship or the timing of meeting up. So if we're thinking about Loop, can you just explain about the driving force, that spark that got you onto Loop, and just talk about Loop Agencies and what it is?
Well, I think back to the coffee chat. I think when we were having that, we were, like I said earlier, we were lucky that we both worked client side and we both worked agency side. So we know how both work and we understand both pretty well. And I think it was quite apparent to us that the world is changing. Demands are getting greater on agencies. And we could see that there was a gap. The traditional agency where the client passes a brief, you do a project, you hand it them back, it was kind of disjointed. There wasn't that relationship there. There wasn't that partnership there. I mean, everybody says we're all partners, but the reality is you are a service. You are delivering to them when they need you to deliver that service. But it's broken in terms of it's not consistent. It's when they need you. Whereas the in-house model, I think, reflects the volume. And, you know, the likes of social media and digital have brought the volume and the speed that you need to turn things around at. It's very difficult to do that at arm's length. So why not have a dedicated team of very professional people who understand their trade sitting in your in your business doing that for you, rather than either hiring them yourself or, you know, having that arm's length relationship with your agency. And I think
there's a bit, like when you set up, like, don't underestimate what you've got. And I know that sounds a really silly thing to say, but, you know, you go into your new venture and you almost want to reinvent the wheel, right? And it's also, there is a burning bridge and there's a hunger for revenue. So it's like, oh my God, we'll say yes to everything. You know, let's be a generalist. We've got to survive here. And sometimes you do need to keep it slightly broader to then narrow down to what your proposition is. But I think we made a really, whether we did it consciously or not, like a really good pragmatic bold decision of put the shutters on and let's go deep niche twice, you know, to like what Ed was saying, that was the way the market was going. We had the experience, we had the playbook, but there's something about sort of wanting to leave the past behind and doing something new, whereas actually, you know, we know financial services through and through, we know in housing through and through, you know, put those two together, deep niche twice, that is what we are. and might be really bold and brave and just think, okay, that's what we're going to do. And, you know, just hope to God there's work in that sector, you know, that you can kind of single-mindedly go for, which luckily there was.
Yeah, and one of the things you, I recall you saying to me, Vicky, was, you know, rely on your inner, your network for the first year, 12 to 18 months. And then you've obviously just gone through that. So you've how have you found that is with the name and you're expanding beyond your
comfort zone? To, like we were saying, of, you know, those sort of formative, you don't realise the equity you've built up and it's humbling, right? I mean, I know that word is overused, but I mean, it genuinely is. And it becomes very personal, actually, because the service you're building, you know, you have people that are really backing you.
Yeah.
So you're not going to let them down, right? You double down, you're going to sort of triple over deliver on that. But you're right, Andy. I think that's a sort of a textbook thing of your organic network's there for you for 18 months or something like that, say. I mean, it's still there for us now, two years plus. And like, okay, you can't rely on it and you shouldn't take it for granted and you're very lucky to have it. But it does give you that sort of, that kind of inner confidence, because success does build success. You just need one person to back you and give you that lucky break, which certainly we had right at the start and we still have now.
And in terms of that doubling down, I mean, we met last year, but I'd already seen the website, and the bit that stuck out for me, you talk about creative services for regulated industries.
Yeah.
And there's something really nice about that, because you have the creative part and then you have the heavily regulated part, and you've put them together. And that stuck with me even before we met. Yeah. So I think that ties into you and what you're speaking about, doubling down in the proposition.
Yeah, just being really single-minded.
And I think that's that understanding what the client needs. I think you can very quickly as an agency decide that you know what the client wants and stop listening to the client. And I think we're obviously, having been client-side, and I think that regulated industries bit talks to, yes, we can be creative, but we can be creative within the framework that you need us to be. So we understand compliance and we understand regulation and we understand all the things that you have to do as a financial services business to make sure that you're compliant. But we can also then layer the creativity over the top of that.
So, you know, still sticking with the company, and again, one of the discussions I had when I first actually met you, Vicky, you were very, we asked what your values were in your business. And I know I've been there before. You have to sometimes think what they are. When, if you're thinking they're not maybe truly your values. Yeah. One thing that really struck me when you told me about them was how absolutely, you know, behind what those values were. Do you want to share that? Because it really struck me.
And
it's underpinned, I suppose, where you've taken the business, which we're going to learn about moving forward. So could you share those? Because I know you'll know them off by heart, because they're coming from your heart.
I totally, and it's, you like you say, it's the classic mouse mat, right, isn't it? If you've got to print them on the mouse mat, then nobody knows them, you know, and you should be, I don't know if you should be able to reel them off. I think they are just so in your heart, you almost don't need to reel them off. But I think it comes back to that initial chat and a level of maturity, a level of experience. And actually, if I'm really honest, I don't think I valued my values up until that point. It was kind of just, embedded, right? But it's at that point of decision, and when you've got to do well, when you reflect on potential experiences, but then when we were setting up Loop, it was, I can't do this anymore. I can't work like this unless, and we're very aligned on this, we're building something different. You know, our mission was always, we're building a different type of agency, and with that, it has to be based on values. It cannot just be about revenue at all costs. I mean, of course, that's important, but any business, but especially a creative agency, your people are all you have. Yeah. And if you're not treating them well and putting your number one value as people first, then what are you actually building? So it was that fundamental sort of belief. And then with that is client contract, how you want to interact with clients and well-being. You can't be good with people unless you're looking after your well-being. It just became like a non-negotiable, like, if we're not doing it for those reasons, let's just not bother doing it. And let's just go and get another safe 9-to-5 job and just, you know, do that.
And dare I say, we have a reputation as an industry of burning people out, working really hard, really long hours, and maybe being dismissive of those things to the detriment of those people to achieve, you know, growth, revenue, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And we always said, well, Does it have to be like that? Is that just something that now people expect because it's been like that for a long time? So yeah, we definitely set out, and it was really counterintuitive. Things like a 9-day fortnight from the off. I mean, that's
didn't make any commercial sense.
That's a fifth of your revenue a week, right? Yeah. You're literally or a fortnight going. Well, no, actually, you don't need that.
I don't think we even did the sums. No, we didn't. If you did the Excel, then absolutely. you probably wouldn't do
off
it
the cliff.
Because absolutely. It's just like it was just the
but
right
I think the reflection. And it is intangible.
Yeah,
but I've always been an advocate, and I've been in places, and I know you have as well, where if you're happy and enjoying yourself, your productivity is way higher than if you're struggling.
Do you absolutely lead by example? Because you've obviously put the hours in initially. Mm.
Yeah. Yes, Andy. This is a journey, right, without trying to flake thing. And I mean, this is actually really important because I hate the sort of toxic hustle, 24/7 expense of everything else. Yeah. Do it to your team. So that is not our culture. But that said, for the first year and a half, if you're not prepared to, you are making that choice to do it. Nobody is forcing you to do it. You are motivated to do it. You're loving doing it. You know, so of course, you need to get a balance. But if you're not prepared to put in the graft and the hard, relentless, repetitive, boring, tedious tasks you just got to keep doing, you probably won't succeed. And I think that's true of sport, of all industries, right? But it's so to answer your question,
probably
no,
not.
But it's a work in progress. We're definitely in different era and chapter.
But that's okay as well.
Yeah,
and
it's
I don't know how you've both found it, but what I'd say about our experience so far is we've enjoyed it because it's ourselves at the moment, and we have the network that we work with, and that's great, and the like-minded people, and we want to work with good people and great companies. But if you believe and you love what you're doing, and then it's your decision to work through the night or to work late or get that quote out or make the trip down to London, it's your choice.
Yeah.
And it still feels very different if you're in that culture making those choices than in a culture that's not that, or even worse, it's toxic.
It's that hunger. It's exciting. It's new. You've got that hunger. And to your point, if you're starting a business and you don't have that hunger, maybe it isn't the right thing because... Yeah, we threw everything and the kitchen sink and some at it. To the point, you know, when you stopped for Christmas, or, you know, I remember getting ill at Christmas. I got a flu because you literally running.
Nothing in the tank.
And until that moment you stop, and then you just kind of fall over for a bit and then hit the reset. So it was a couple of times when we just kind of caught each other and went, okay, time to stop now. Let's just take a breather here.
Yeah.
You know, we still made a point of, we made sure we went on holiday and stuff, didn't we? And it wasn't everything. We found that balance quite quickly, I think.
That's the co-founder support net again, isn't it? That's where it's nice to bounce off.
It's
not just the business ideas, it's what's happening to yourself individually.
But it's the energy, it fuels you, right, isn't it? And I also think you're both on that same, like you guys, I can feel it coming from you. You know, there's like, it's so exciting to get out there, right? You know, and it's an energy you rediscover maybe because you may in a previous, you know, it kind of got a bit lidded, but you are there to check yourself, you know, now and again, you know. We don't need to work Saturday night. Yeah. That can wait until Sunday afternoon.
But also
that
energy, once you've experienced it, it's something that comes along when you're employing people. You feel it in the people you're speaking to and the hunger, you see it in the people. And I think from that perspective, you can actually end up building a much stronger team because it's a reflection of the hunger that you had. So you see it. I mean, it's never going to be the same because it's not their business, right? Not always their business. but you can feel the people who have that energy that you have and that desire to want to drive things. I think we've managed to find a really strong team.
And in terms of leadership, and you both having each other and the road you've been on, then you've doubled your staff over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And they'll feed off that as well, I would have thought.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it's...
Well, the culture can't come from us long term.
No, we're all
or we become the failure point of the business. So it has to be spread, and you almost want them to be the advocates for the business when the next wave of team join that they're learning the same messages and the same culture from the team. Not, it's never going to work as a culture if you stand up and read it off slides and go, this is how we want you to think and feel and behave. You know, it has to be natural.
I can say I've met one or two of your team when I've been in, or one of your events, the AB event that you had, your AI event, and you know, you can feel the energy from them. So you're obviously, it's cascading down, and that's what you want. And you know, if they're in the 9-day week, which you're and I'm sure they are, and you're you've won a number of awards for your culture, they might be interviewing one of
that. Must be nice. It's a rubber stamp in the culture you're trying to create.
I mean, it's easy to be cynical about awards, right? You kind of go, oh yeah, awards, you know, like being like false humility, but it is important. You know, we've actually actively not doing awards this year. We're reinvesting the money and actually giving it to charity and back to our clients, because we do feel it's a bit of a merry-go-round. But that said, to package 2 years of winning incredible awards actually for our work, for our client work and for our team. And even though it may not mean anything to the team day to day, I think it's, you know, it's what they feel, right? Not the award name. Mm-hmm. Because if you win, you know, best B2B place to work and it doesn't feel like that, then it's a hollow promise. But it does mean things to our clients. When we're going for procurement exercises, it shows we are a different type of agency, that we do invest in these things. We do care. And if we need that external validation of that, that's what an award gives you. Like you say, Gregor, that rubber stamp to prove it.
I think I noticed in LinkedIn recently as well, you had maybe it was at the turn of the year, your get together with your team at the townhouse. Yeah.
Yes.
And how important is that to have a stop, not only for you guys to go on holiday, but also to stop with the team and say, this is where we're going, or this is what we've achieved so far. Yeah. This is where we're going. And then you're still make sure you're all on track.
Yeah. They're really important, because we're predominantly remote. We do maybe try and get together once or twice a week, and the team is kind of spread across the country as well. Mm-hmm. So they're hugely important, and the feedback from the team every time we do one of those is really, really positive, because it isn't about it's taking you out of the day to day and giving that direction and giving that focus. And we're really transparent with them. You know, we probably share more than certainly I've ever had shared with me when I've worked for agencies in terms of
the numbers and where we're going and all of that detail.
And what we need to do. So from that perspective, I think they're hugely important. But also it just galvanizes what is a strong team already. Mm-hmm. That everybody gets on, everybody knows each other really well, and I think again that helps the culture.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's looking out for everybody else.
And is that making the onboarding when someone new comes on? Is that happening quicker?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty seamless. I mean, just back to that point as well, what Ed was talking about, and it leads on to onboarding, because we naturally timed that event because we had four new starters. Yeah. So what better induction, right? But also, I flippantly say we've been winging it for the last 2 years, and we haven't. But we've never had a business plan. I've always had this kind of Achilles heel of like, we need a business plan. We actually haven't planned this. You know, we're just like riding this wave and just sort of working through it. So for the first time ever over Christmas, we wrote a proper 4-year business plan. It was like very grown up. So actually to be able to share that with the team, this is where we're going. It's coming from the heart, but it's also coming from the head. We've got it mapped out. We've got the growth. We've got the client service propositions, really simplifying it as well, so they can sort of really understand the key ratios and metrics. Felt amazing to actually present quite grown up as an agency. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we are actually know what we're doing now and know where we're going into year 3 of trading, which we only just started. So
brilliant. And I think
on that point though, even though we didn't have a business plan, we weren't
planned without a business plan.
So for example, we had
we'll scrub that there.
It's a good point.
We didn't have a plan as in a direction of growth. But every we were militant day to day. We had growth targets. We if we didn't bring in X revenue, it wouldn't allow us to hire an extra. So we were pretty rigorous around that. So the structure of the business, I think, was really strong. And I think something that we learned early on is you have to know where every penny is and when it's coming in to be able to make those decisions. And I think that helped us bring on we the first employee that we brought on, Richard, was just, I mean, crikey, how much did we dwell over that before we made the decision. But now I think when we bring on new people, because all of that rigor and that structure is in place, it's very easy to make that decision from a business perspective. And then it's just a case of, do they fit culturally?
So no business plan for a while, but rigorous day to day. And that's interesting because I've known companies, we'll speak to one a few months back, and have got a really good business plan, but they're so rigid around it that that adaptability, the flexibility to move or pivot isn't there.
I think we knew what big felt like. We'd both worked and grown and transformed really big agencies, and we don't want to be a big agency, but you know those operational foundation. If you're building it on sand and you're scaling, everything goes, right? So it's this sort of, I heard it at a conference, I think year one, and I used to like use it as a sort of like this kind of like, if we double in size, will we fall over? If we triple in size, will we fall over? And the answer was, oh my God, yes. And I, it constantly was maybe, probably, maybe not, you know? So we kind of gone into that phase now of, actually, if we tripled in size overnight, all the foundations are there and the know-how, we could scale up from there.
So talking about being grown up, and the next sort of like a key moment in the history of, I suppose, Loop Agencies is moving to your employee owner trust.
Yes.
I mean, obviously you've had to have some sort of rigor in place to sort of move forward there, but that seems to embody just the fact that you've done it so quickly, the quickest Scottish company, is that correct, to go to the OT? So tell us a bit about that, how you arrived at that, but it sounds as if it's underpinned by your values there as well, but just tell us a bit more about that, and you know, it's an exciting time for you.
It is.
So yeah, it was interesting. We always set out the business with a plan. When we said we'd have a business plan, we had a plan in our heads that due to our age, it was like kind of, this is our kind of last hurrah, last throw of the dice almost, in terms of we want to build something that is ultimately saleable. So that was something we decided we wanted to do. No real time frame on it. But having spoken to, again, our network and some of the, you know, trusted people that we know, we ended up having lunch with one of our network. And we'd started to get some noise from people about, okay, because we were quite niche and had this kind of quite saleable asset in essence, there was no firm offers, but people interested talking to us. We had lunch with a friend and kind of business confidant who said, have you ever thought of it yet? An employee-owned trust? And we, at the time, we didn't know anything about it. We'd heard of it, but we didn't really, you know, as much as, oh, is that when you basically sell it to your employees? So we did a lot of research, a lot of understanding of what that was, met Carol, who's kind of the preeminent employee-owned trust person in Scotland, and has been phenomenal for us. But in essence, we also went out and spoke to agency owners and people who'd sold their agencies and so on and so forth. And when you looked at private equity or sale to a bigger agency group, or none of them felt quite right, that they're all bought for the client list, not for the team, not for the value in the business. Whereas the employee-owned trust meant that that by selling, in essence, you sell to a trust that our shares are put in trust for the team who are all beneficiaries of that trust going forward. But the future of the agency is in the control of the team then, rather than it being decided by, you know, another entity elsewhere. And in essence, everybody who said, we spoke to said, don't do a trade sale, don't go private equity.
We did a lot of legwork. It was a very... quick decision once you'd made the decision, because like to your point, Andy, it was just right. It just felt right. The values really underpinned it. And arguably a trade sale, you could have quite a quick exit, potentially more lucrative, right? But what you have to trade for that trade sale, I mean, I think I spoke to about 68 different businesses. I actively went out sort of from September, and I went to every conference, cornered somebody in a corner, just like pummeled them for information, you know, like universally. Maybe I just spoke to 68 people.
Well, I spoke to a load too.
You know,
across the board, it was, they come out of it a bit battered and bruised.
Yeah.
Of that sort of, you know, that final of sort of giving up the control, but giving up the culture that you've created and this sort of security you've created for your people, which let's not forget, it's your people that have got you here to even being considering a trade sale. So to then dismiss, you know, that and just sort of capitalize on value just for the founders and what it does to you as a founder, potentially, of, you know, a very different sort of having to answer to someone differently and, you know, different targets being set. So as soon as we came to terms with that, which didn't take long with that thorough research, it was really the only decision to like put it in trust for the team to benefit from and be.
And it comes back to culture and values. I think if you keep aligning against that, that's where for some it will be private equity, for others it might be external or bolt-ons, but it's got to feel right. It sounds like you've got the right balance.
Yeah.
So now that you've done that, how does that then tie in with the fact you've got the business plan and your growth expansion plans? Because if I think about some of the people we're speaking to, we've got friends, partners, business-wise, and they went employee-owned, and they're finance helping both in retention.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's also helping attract really good caliber of clients.
Yeah.
So they're all loving it. The team seem to be loving it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the backbone of what already would have been our culture and vision. So, you know, that team day you were talking about, that didn't accidentally happen that month. You know, obviously this was a roadmap of communications that we were coming together, sharing a growth plan for the next 3 years, 4 years of that, and getting people on board with that, with then the real tangibility the month later of where, you know, it's very easy to say all this stuff, but it's very genuine from us to literally put our money where our mouth is of saying, and it's 100% as well, you know. Yeah, I mean, we are all in with this.
Okay.
There is an option to sort of keep some shares back. We are 100% all in. If we're doing it, we're doing it, you know, with our whole energy and heart. So, like, you know, to tell the team, we're here, we're building you up. You know, we're not going anywhere yet because we love it. But, you know, we want to sort of have this real transparency now of building everybody up. Everyone's got skin in the game, you know, for that next generation of leaders who've got decades ahead of themselves in this great industry.
I mean, this is, to me, you're actually describing what the true word of legacy, because you say, what's your legacy? But I think with the employee owner's trust allows you to do that in a very natural way.
It feels grandiose. Like, I mean, it's I don't think it's our legacy. I think it's the 15 of us, the legacy. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's good.
And it just felt right. It ticked all the boxes, you know, across the board. And like Vicky said, we're not going anywhere. We have no plans to go anywhere. We are enjoying what we're doing wholeheartedly. But at the same time, we know there's going to be a point in time where the team will want to take it on for themselves.
Yeah.
And we can gracefully step aside and comfortably go, here is a business that not only you have an ownership in, it's now debt-free. It is doubled in size. That's the forecast over the next 5 years, for it to double in size again, and that is yours to take on and do what you want.
And that's a job for yourselves as well. That's really exciting. You're growing, but then you have to bring people up, because some people will like a certain level of work,
absolutely,
or a certain type of work, and it's bringing them along with you. But it sounds like you've got the foundation.
Yeah.
We've been impressed actually how well the team have embraced it.
Yeah, we're a
and
month
how
in
much
or so.
They understand
yeah.
it
yeah.
And you see people taking a real vested interest in it. And actually we were warned to say you need to be careful not to expect too much, because one, it's brand new information.
Mm.
Two, maybe they never wanted to own a business, so you know that juxtaposition comes in. But actually it, again, probably a reflection of how good our team are, that they have really sat up and taken notice and really understood it, which is great.
And one thing I was going to come to was the word, all these words, legacy, entrepreneurship. You know, you may not felt, you said you didn't know you wanted to start a business, but you've had it in you.
Yeah.
But apart from, you know, I'm interested to understand what you feel you're, you know, what that means to you, but also you've created many entrepreneurs with everyone that's come along on the journey with you, I suppose. That's what you've almost described. So how does your experiences shaped your entrepreneur in you?
Goodness, yeah. so You never recognise it in yourself, do you, I suppose?
No.
Like, we should answer this question for each other.
I know.
Because you're just going all the time.
That would be easier. You never Well, I'll say for you then, what I bounce off of Ed, this is me then. So it's, you've got this, I mean, it comes from your interest in sport and your success in sport with your cycling and things, but you've got this competitive drive, not in an arrogant way, but it's something that I join in with, and it really fuels us. You know, there is no milestone we're not going to hit.
Yeah.
Sort of that drive and focus.
Yeah. Yeah. Yours, the diligence, the, I think that drive that you have, it's different to the competitiveness. There's a drive there that kind of, me being a creative, I can be a little bit more laid back. Yeah, so I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it. And Vicky's really good at going, no, let's kind of, we need to nail this now. And it's kind of helped me, I think more kind of urgently about stuff. And it's driven us both on, I think, definitely. And I think that's probably the best thing about this partnership is
it's like a yin and
we
yang.
Are polar opposites in terms of skill set. So there is very little crossover unless there needs to be. So I think from that perspective, we complement each other really well. We're not fighting over wanting to do the same stuff. Mm-hmm. Vicky's off doing the finance and the new biz and stuff, and I'm doing the tech and the creative side. And it just does seem to have worked really well, hasn't it?
But then you're doubling your power then, right, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Because you're both sort of focused. So I guess that other entrepreneurial thing of, it's a shared belief, and it's not toxic, like going back to what we were saying earlier, but this, you just put that extra bit in, you can do it. So I've got this real cliche saying, my daughters hate me saying, but it's like, I've not come this far to come this far. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what does that even mean? You know, and it was lovely. I was telling you that.
Yeah.
I think your younger, your younger daughter's like, so maybe it's a female thing.
Well, no, I think it's just children that aren't yours.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they actually, they would respect you then. Yeah, yes, somebody else. Yeah. But it just, it's that extra 10%, isn't it? It's that extra bit. It's like, never settle for good enough.
Yeah.
And I think we share that. And then maybe that is an entrepreneurial spirit of like, you're going to find a solution. You just got to keep working at it if it isn't an obvious solution. You can't accept no, right?
I have quite a seminal moment in my career, I think. You know about this, Vicky. That when I worked at, and I'll be totally honest, Standard Life Investments, I was doing graphic design, I was doing video editing. You know, I'd created this role because in-house, if something new came along, I'd be like, I'll do it. And I'd kind of created this kind of Frankenstein of a role where I could do anything creatively, from building website stuff to video to print design to whatever it might be. And I owned it, and I really enjoyed it, and I was really good at it, and I built really good relationships. So the whole business, you know, I could walk into the CEO's office and go, we need to do a video on this. And he'd be like, great, Ed, come in, let's get it. So it was really, really good. And I felt like I've been doing this now for 3 years and I want to, I think I'm warrant a promotion, you know, a different role, you know. And I was always told, no, you're doing a great job. You're not quite ready. You're not. And then the head of marketing changed and a new woman came in called Neura Walsh. And she did the right thing. She interviewed everybody in the marketing department. Tell me what you think. Tell me what's happening. And I said to her, this is my opportunity. I'm just saying, I think I'm doing a really good job, but I'm not getting the opportunity to progress. And she went away, and she came back, and we had a meeting 2 weeks later, and she said, why do you think that is? I said, I don't really know. And she said, it's because it's too easy for them to keep you where you are. It's very hard for us to hire and replace you with somebody that can do everything that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than give you fresh opportunities and promote you and get you, just leave Ed in the box in the corner because he's doing a great job. And that was, for me, that was the moment in my career I went, oh, hang on a minute, nobody's looking out for me here. I have to do this on my own.
Nobody put baby in the corner, is that?
Yeah.
Dirty dancing.
Yeah.
Nobody puts Ed in the corner.
Absolutely. And it was just that. You could have gone one or two ways there. You could have gone, fine, all right, I give up. I'll just do this and I'm good at it and enjoy it. Or the other way is like,
no one's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's saying, isn't it? No one's coming.
And then it was just, okay, I'm doing this for me now. I think when you're younger in your career, you think, oh, they think I'm brilliant. The business think I'm, look how hard I'm working. And actually, you're not. You're never, especially in the bigger businesses, you're never more than useful until you're not useful.
So how have you flipped that into loop? I mean, I often, especially two young daughters, we've all got kids, all of similar ages, they're very hungry to get on very quickly.
Yes.
What's your, you know, with your team, you know, you've just described what you were like, you sounded like you were time served and everyone, then to make that move. So how would you harness the Gen
Z? The Gen Z hunger.
Yeah.
But what a great energy as well, though, right? I mean, we've got to accept the world has changed, you know, the whole post-COVID thing. We all work differently now. Technology can't enforce your values of what you had to do when you were that age, you know, onto this new generation. And back to the EOT, actually, as well. I mean, I think it is a sort of secret sauce, which is quite intangible, of what is the purpose now of work, you know, with the macroeconomics and, you know, what... this generation is facing into, you know, for their future. So to at least make work safe as much as it can be safe, of a secure culture which you know, like, and relate to, with endless opportunities, you are empowered to, you know, it's progress over perfection. It's put your hand up, it's do it. You know, that's definitely our culture, especially now, that entrepreneurial spirit, because you literally own the company. So, you know, if you're not going to fix it, who is going to fix it?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, you really are sort of, it's all there to play for. So, you know, that sense of purpose harnesses that energy,
I guess.
A good
environment for them.
Yeah. So you're putting your energy into something that's progressive rather than just transactional, maybe of just a job.
And I think, there's that... In our generation, you maybe stayed in a job for a long time, hoping that the company would recognize you and give you promotions.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this generation are very much, if I'm not getting what I want here, I'm going to go somewhere else and I will sell. And maybe that's the right opportunity, moving around. In fact, you moved around a lot more than I did. But I think that as a way to find what makes you happy. And I think this generation are much more about, if I don't enjoy that, I'm not going to do it. Yep. Whereas we sat and did stuff that we had.
It's a big change.
Good on them, right?
Absolutely.
Like, happy voice,
exactly. So thinking about the journey the last couple of years, you've got the EOT, business plan, everything's going really well. You've got a huge amount of traction. The team's growing. What's next? What are the expansion plans? Is it geographical? Is it some of the areas you're going to get involved in?
Do you know, it's like... I don't think that feels like an ego-driven question with respect, which I love. And I think that maybe is a trap of a business you could potentially fall into, right? Of like, America, you know, we've got an American client, you know, we've got international opportunities, but equally, we've got a tremendous client base in Edinburgh and London.
Yeah.
And actually, this sort of
still only scratching the surface,
we're
aren't we?
Only
really?
Scratching the surface, and that sticking to your knitting thing. We're just going to carry on doing what we're doing. I mean, that is what we're about. We're very focused. I mean, you can talk maybe about how we're fueling it. I mean, like AI and tech and driving the innovation that way. But we're not going to change anything, I don't think, hopefully. It's like
it's
loving this, you know. And not.
But you're opening your London office for us now. Yeah. So that was already there. I mean, I know you had your portable office.
It's pretty natural, right? I mean, now, you know, some key members of our team already in London.
Yeah.
I mean, London's like a second home, you know, to me anyway. I used to live there. My daughter lives there. Our clients are all in London. They're London and Edinburgh. But what's nice about being more physically in London now is we just won our first client, for example. It's solely in London and international. There's no Scottish connection, you know, so it just takes us on to that next tier.
Yeah.
Of clients, but the business and the service is the same. It's just
so stick to your knitting and it'll happen organically, I suppose. That's what you're
I think the offering is we've had the validation from our clients that the proposition and the offering has real value to them, and it's not just them as an individual client, as an industry, financial services. This what we're offering is really, really valuable to them in terms of being able to scale their marketing quickly and efficiently. I think our view on AI and tech as well being integral to that is probably a differential. People are going to catch up, but we're I think there's a lot of people waiting to see what happens with AI, and we can't stand still with that. How are we going to utilize this? And, you know, we're already starting to build language models and test them with our clients, and we're using AI imagery. And interestingly, we're seeing it's the clients asking us, hey, what are you doing with AI? It's not the agencies proactively going to clients and saying, hey, we're doing all this cool stuff. So we don't want to be waiting for our clients to ask us. We're going to our clients with, you know what, you can do this in 2 weeks, or you can actually do this in less time with the same result if you use AI. And using AI appropriately, there's a whole, I mean, it's a minefield, right, at the moment. Yeah. So I think there's that classic, if you've learned 70% of it and it's not quite ready to use with the client, when it is ready to use with the client, you're 70% ahead of the people that just waited to see what was going to happen. Mm. So it's that. That's the thing that's going to make the difference. And building a different agency, but it was, that mantra has always been, yes, there's a way of doing this, which is back to Mad Men, and there's the way that agencies operate hasn't changed in 50, 60, 70 years, I don't think, other than computers came along and the internet came along. But that the traditional way of doing business with clients, we don't want to do that. We want to be, you know, in there, you know, pulling apart, how do we make things better for you? How do we improve things for you? And tech and AI is going to be
integral. So in terms of AI is quite a broad, as a broad statement. What are the top sort of three tools that you're using to put it into perspective for an agency such as yourself?
Yeah, I mean, there aren't any top tools. I think it's like when social media started, there were hundreds and hundreds of platforms, and over time it's honed down to, you know, five or six big ones. I think the same is going to happen with AI.
Yeah.
So at the moment, for example, you know, my focus is very much on the generative AI side for creativity and so content writing, things like that. But we'll try 10 different tools for copywriting. We'll try 10 different image generation tools. We'll try 10. So we're finding out which ones. And what you'll find is, what's brilliant today, in 6 months' time, one of the others will have taken its place as the best one. And I think we're in that.
Keeping up with the
100%. The Joneses, it's almost a full-time job researching what's coming down the line, what's changing, how does it work?
Yeah.
And again, the team have been really good. I think a lot of the designers are a little bit, oh, I'm not going to have a job because it's going to do it for me. Our team are very much, here's another tool in the arsenal that I can use to do my job more effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so in terms of, I suppose, moving forward, you're working in finance or the sector, that regulated industry.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about things happening organically, but is there, again, you know, there are other regulated industry. I can think of pharmaceuticals, for instance. Is there any sort of, would that be another move outside your network?
Absolutely. There's a lot of breadth there in the broad church banner of regulated industries. Equally, there's a lot of depth in financial services. And so what will be, you know, it will come, it will go for both. I mean, we did some work for a very interesting, totally out of category, none of those categories type of client. And it just shows the products can be drastically different, but the transferable operational backbone is the same. So, you know, we love that challenge, but equally we love the sector we're in.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a sort of a boredom or a frustration of like trying to sort of find something new. You know, we're about depth and longevity, not lots and lots of different projects. We build in-house agencies for clients. They last then for years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's about that for us, those sort of deep connections and relationships, and you can only manage so many of those, you know. So
it is agnostic of financial services. We've chosen to do it with financial services, but any business that has a large volume of marketing assets that they need to deliver at speed is fair game. But like you said, if it happens, it happens. If, you know, if a hotel chain approaches us and asks us to solve the problem, we would look at it, but we're not proactively going to go after them at the moment, because financial services is where we know. And
do you know, the Edinburgh Fringe were probably one of our earliest wins, right? Yes. And everyone sort of says, oh, the Edinburgh Fringe, that's not financial services. No, but it is regulated. But, you know, the world's biggest arts festival, a hell of a lot of volume once a year. Okay, not always on, but actually it's the same model, just done in a different way. And God, that what I was saying earlier about that sort of success breeds success. You know, that win for us, God, we were hungry. God, we tried harder, right? It was literally Ed and I at the time then. And, you know, we had our fingers crossed behind our back. Sorry, Fringe, if you're watching this. But, you know, when they were saying, are you going to hire? Are you going to go, yeah, of course we are. But, you know, to have that confidence for a brand of that magnitude and scale to sort of take a chance on a little two-month-old startup, you know. But
I mean, we have a great relationship with the Fringe.
Incredible
client. And they, you know, since said, we could not give you that. We couldn't. You were a two-person startup, 2 months old. They even asked us when we pitched, are you even going to be here at Christmas?
Yeah.
Because you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But then the work and the hunger, they said, actually, when it came to the crunch, we couldn't not give it to you because you wanted it more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So it was really, I mean, I think we're really grateful that there's still businesses out there who are willing to go with their gut on stuff, because that was a really important moment for us. And they've been a brilliant client since, and now the rest of the team are working with them as well, and the feedback is the same across the board. So I think that's just a human nature story, I think, which was really nice. In a cutthroat world now of business, that somebody was still willing to take a chance on a small agency.
Yeah.
And again, we did it differently. We approached it from a technical, digital, here's how you can get the most out of your advertising. Here's how you can run different sets of ads. It's not about a printed cover, which traditionally was always the jewel in the crown of if you won the Fringe, you've got to do the cover. And we flipped it on its head. And I think things like that, just thinking differently, helped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We actually got quite a lot of feedback from the podcast we're showing at the Fringe.
Oh, that was excellent,
And people were saying they enjoyed the thinking about leadership and talking about the bumps or the failures as much as the successes and what you learn from it.
Yeah.
So can you think of any big bumps over the last few years, or even just to roll towards finishing up, a key learning either between yourselves or just going through the process of starting the company?
Yeah. Well, I'll do one, and I'll take all the blame. I'll take all the blame. I mean, that sort of secret source of that sort of impatience and that hunger and that drive and getting it registered while you're in the cinema and all that sort of stuff, you know, that has definitely helped us accelerate our growth. But note to self, sometimes slow down just that wee bit. You know, I made a catastrophic company setup admin failure when we first set up, to our accountant pointing out, you do know the share ownership's not equal here. And oh dear. And that took quite a bit of unraveling, you know, and that was a careless, rushed admin error. It was, I promise.
Yeah.
But, you know, but things like that could really fundamentally trip you up, because, I mean, thank goodness for our very amazing, diligent accountant who spotted it early doors, and we're a way of, you know, obviously restructuring to sort of smooth that over. If you discovered that now, you know, it would have been a lot harder. So, you know, there is this piece of this sort of relentless energy and things like that. But then equally, when you're tired and you are, like, you can make mistakes, and sometimes they could be big mistakes. Yeah. So, you know, there is something to learn there that, you know, you could have really messed things up.
It's a good vintage here.
Yeah.
Mine's more about, again, if you set a culture, you've got to follow through on it. And we resigned a client very early on with quite a lot of money attached to it because of a number of circumstances. But it would have been so easy to go, that's a lot of money. We kind of need that money. We need to keep that money. And you basically throw your values away for the money. And I think it was a really, I mean, it wasn't a difficult decision.
It's the best coffee we've ever had. It was like, literally, we need to have a chat about... No, we're resigning them. But it was just like, we didn't even need to chat about it. It was like, no, zero tolerance.
It was easy. But you can understand the challenge that comes for so many businesses when there's money on the table and you're going to write it off because it's not right for the business. And it wasn't right for the business. And, you know, now we look back on that. But actually, the reflection of that on the team... If you'd gone the other way, it destroys that culture.
Well, what are you prepared to put up with for finance?
And I think you see too much of that in industry, and I think probably agencies feel the wrath of that with challenging clients sometimes, that actually maybe it would be better for everybody if probably better for the client as well and the agency if you didn't work together, but nobody's willing to stand up and make that call or make that decision. I'm kind of really proud that we did that, because it just said to the team, these aren't hollow words, that our values aren't hollow, we stand by these. And I think it was, but it was still hard, because
As in, we'd hired against that, right, as well. So that there's a person's livelihood was against that revenue line, which then is a gaping hole, and you have to fill it.
Which we did.
And again, you've just said it there, sticking to your values and it's underpinned everything you've done. I suppose the last question before we move to a bit of a fun section in the podcast, but if you had a loop crystal ball, where do you see yourself in, let's say, 2 to 3 years?
Well, that crystal ball is slightly more tangible now. So if you'd asked that a few months ago, even, I wouldn't be able to answer it, because I never saw 3 years ago sitting here doing this, you know.
Yeah, so
we were still in that survival mode, you know, can we survive till Christmas? Not talking about an EOT, which we've got future beneficiaries. So that is where we're literally handing over the crystal ball, if that's not a crash analogy, but not in that short time frame, because I think, you know, we've got a lot of work to do with our clients, and we've got really good senior relationships with clients as well. But definitely from an empowerment to the next generation of leaders, for them to be running the show of this incredible company that we've all built together, and handing over the keys to them.
You concur with that?
100%. It happened quicker than we expected it to, but that was always, I think, the plan to build a business that was viable going forward, and the EOT things like almost the kind of icing on the cake, in terms of we know there's a life beyond our ownership of it, and that, you know, personally in retirement, sitting back, you know, in 20 years time, I kind of hope that they've taken that business on and grown it to be a really successful big agency. And
fantastic story. So I said we've got a bit of a new section to our podcast, which we're calling
off the cuff
Gregor. Okay.
So just to Gregor finish off,
I have no cuffs.
So we're towards that, but I think for me and Andy as co-founders and way back in the journey, so just the first 4 or 5 months for us, I think it's been a really good chat.
Absolutely.
But I think for people who are going to listen or watch, the amount of business thoughts and the journey you've been through, I think there's some really key messages, because it's not just a trajectory like that. It can be bumpy, there's peaks and troughs, but even for us, I think it's appreciation of everything you went through so far, and it's
brilliant
what you've
achieved.
We're here
to cheer you guys on as well. We will do it in your growth. It's going to be stellar.
You might not say that after these next questions.
Okay, maybe not. I'll retract that bit.
This is Gregor. Gregor's the host of Off the Cuff.
So this is separate. So don't worry. If you have an answer, you have an answer. There's two co-founders, so one can answer the other.
Yeah, it's teamwork.
Short answers. We'll go for it. Late or fashionably early?
Oh, my God. Polar opposites. Always fashionably early.
Yeah.
Always late.
Really?
Yeah.
All the time?
Shocking.
That sounds familiar.
It does sound familiar, yeah.
You've got to be at least 20 minutes early. You've got to be sat in reception waiting. Okay. Ed's leaving.
Unless it's a Monday meeting with me, and I regularly get a text saying, I'm on the bus. I'm
safe space there, though.
right, Vicky, you're going for a coffee with Gregor 20
minutes. Yeah, okay. Are we aligned with that then?
Best habit?
Best habit?
Your best habit.
Walking the dog.
Ed?
To clear your head.
Ooh. Best habit. Considering my decision, I will always stop and think before I give an answer.
Okay. Ed, best thing about Vicky?
Her drive.
Vicky, best thing about Ed?
His calmness.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty.
Balancing.
Yeah.
It's important.
It is, yeah.
If you could take a day out of the week and replace it with a second Saturday, what day goes?
Oh, good question.
Oh, it's crazy.
Wednesday.
Why?
A midweek reset. Two hard days, midweek reset, two solid days, weekend.
Yeah. I'm randomly going to go Tuesday, and this will sound really controversial, so you can have two Mondays, because I actually love the start of the week of a Monday and the energy and the galvanisation.
I'm Tuesday.
So I've been
Bob Geldof, Bob Geldof's song's out the window then, isn't it?
Easy one. Favourite karaoke song to do?
Do you know? Well, I'll tell you one not to do. I tried to rap Dizzy Rascal in a party and goodness me, you get halfway through that rap and you realise you're stood on a stage on your own. There's a lot of song to go, so don't do that one.
You need fitness for that one, don't you? Yeah, full on that one.
Walking in Memphis, Mark Cohen.
That's a good song.
Sounds like a singer in the midst. Best singer?
Oh, God, I've got such a muso husband. That is such a big question. I'm going...
I mean, between you two.
Yeah. Oh, between us. Oh, my God. Right.
That's an easy
question. I have no idea.
I have no idea.
You sing either. In the office, though, if there's something good comes
along. I do like music, but I can't sing. Is that a good answer?
Unfortunately.
You're quite a good singer. That's why you asked that question.
No, it's not.
Dear God, how much did you pay for answer?
Don't tell him that.
So this is written wrongly because this was a few months ago. We're thinking about it. You've already won lots of awards, but if you knew you're going to win an award and they're asking you what your walk-on music would be for yourselves and the Loop team, what would the walk-on music be?
Oh, like some really powerful northern soul.
Mm-hmm.
Brass vibes.
Very good.
He's not sure about that.
I believe in a thing called love by the darkness.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's got a bit of energy about it.
That's some high notes as well.
High notes. Yeah, it has, yeah. Long hair.
If the Loop team were a band, what genre of music would you play?
God. That's totally flummoxed me.
We had a think about this and we thought Lynx would be interpretive jazz.
Oh, God, no, I hate jazz, so definitely not. Yeah, definitely not.
Just to tell
jazz.
You, that wasn't my choice.
I think kind of Brit pop, kind of 90s.
Like,
kind
fun.
Of, there's a kind of, we're doing it a bit different.
There's a
fun,
rework playlist little bit of an edge. That hits the mark, doesn't it? When that playlist comes on, everyone's singing it. Yeah, so that one.
Brilliant.
There's a couple left. What do you love about your business?
Love about it. I mean, genuinely, it sounds really cliche to say work with the people. So it is just this perfect thing that you want to be part of.
Yeah.
It's a good answer.
Yeah.
Ed?
The freedom to do things differently. We've always said to the team, like, just because it's done like that in the past, how are we going to do it this time? So that kind of openness and freedom to solve the problem however you want, I think that's really, really nice. That kind of means every day is different and every challenge is different.
Brilliant. And if you think about the last hour or so, we started with upbringing, the start of business, your own business will look. So if you think about that whole journey for both of you, is there one thing that you feel you're really good at business-wise that you bring through for the rest of your life outside of work? So something that you apply in business, but it's also something that really stands you in good stead for outside of it.
I think for me, and like with that, it's a really great arc you've taken us on here because you never take time to reflect, do you? So it's that solution mindset I think I've realised about myself. There is literally nothing I don't think I can solve in life and work if you just put your mind to it and just work that bit harder.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's great. Ed?
Inquisitiveness. Everything. How does that work? How does that happen? Why does that do that? What that?
Yeah.
This insatiable appetite to work out why it does it the way it does it, or why has that been done the way it's been done. And that, I just love the learning thing, something like I said at the start, terrible at school, hated it, to now I'm just like a sponge.
And it keeps you you present, you know, keeps you the kids, I suppose, you want to say.
Absolutely.
That but I think that's so important to have that energy for knowledge. And you know, you don't need to know everything as well.
And that's knowledge. Like I'll sit and listen to our creatives who have. How have you done that?
Gosh,
what did you do there? How, you know, that, and it just helps me. You know,
fantastic. Yeah,
love it.
Ed, Vicky, you've suffered through off the cuff questions.
Yeah.
So thanks for that, and thanks so much for the chat. It's brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
And,
really,
all the best going forward, Philip.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You too.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you, guys.
All the best.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Pleasure having you. Thanks for.